Picture this. Recording studios somewhere far, far away.
House experience. Hello, I'm Jonathan Ross, and as always, I'll try and redeem my unbearably rubbish gags by putting a drum beat after everything I say. All right, thank you. In fact, I'm now going to do a half-hour stand-up routine accompanied by Cozy Powell's Dance with the Devil. And now the sport experience. Sport is divided into two experiences, the experience of it on TV and the experience of it when you try to do it. The boundaries between the two are rarely breached.
And the crowd here at this Winter Olympics are hushed in waiting for the freestyle routine of the Russian ice skating champion Andrei Serenko to begin. Oh, that's fabulous. Serenko has begun by holding onto the barrier around the edge and wobbling. He's got about 3 feet round. Oh, look at that. He's fallen over. Up he gets. Oh, no. Down he goes. And now, yes, there it is. The bitter glance as a seven-year-old goes past doing it really well. Other sports, however, have no connection at all with the real world. Walking, for example. Professional walkers often complain that people laugh at them. Well, of course they do. That's because they walk stupidly. Max Wall never thought, oh, I wonder what they're laughing at. I mean, don't these people look back at the height of their careers and think, oh, I've trained really hard to look like a tosspot? A marathon walk is basically a 26-kilometre mince.
I mean, after what is the point? Because there is no situation where you would have to move that fast where it wouldn't be better to run. Unless you were walking in that way that you do when there are some hard lads behind you and you start to walk faster but think, I'd better not run now because then they'll know I'm not hard. But once I get round behind that corner, I'll leg it. But in fact, you're digging your own grave because by now, from the back, you're doing an impression of John Inman.
The only other sporting event that involves stupid walking is the equestrian dressage. Now, in this, the rider gets the horse to walk sideways. This he achieves by hitting it on the side of the head with a hammer.
Horses have such a terrible deal in sport. For a start, they are just shot at the drop of a hat, right, for breaking a leg. I mean, that seems a bit rough. Why can't they just have a splint and some plaster and maybe a sit-down for the rest of the race? But with horses, all veterinary decency breaks down. Hello, Dr. Harriet. Look, sorry to call you out, but Bessie here has got a stone caught in her hoof.
Oh, not to worry. We'll soon have that sorted out.
Oh.
Any other trouble?
Dobbin's off his food, but...
Any more?
No, the others are all perfectly fine. Very well.
Hello.
Good Lord. It's the Queen. How can I help you, Mum?
Here's my daughter. Thank you.
It's like with all other animals, vets got shown ordinary training films, but for horses, they got shown Equus. Either that, or the Royal Veterinary Society has a major shareholding in Bostick. Which shows that something dodgy must be going on. Because, like, if horses are so full of glue, then, like, their legs would mend really quickly. I mean, it stands to reason.
Right, this kind of cruelty to horses, shut up, this kind of cruelty to horses only persists because the government refuses to legalise dogfighting. And we at the Merry White House Experience not only believe that dog fighting should be legalised, we think it should be televised instead of crafts. You see that programme Watchdog that they have? That's not actually a dog fighting programme. I've watched that show for 3 years now and I haven't seen a single pregnant pit bull with its eye hanging out.
Hello, and in today's Watchdog, we investigate problems with electrical goods. But first, it's over to Sid's disused car lot in Leicester for Black Fang versus Ripping Boy Rex.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Leicester. There's a big purse on tonight's fight. The winner gets some extra winner lot, and the loser gets thrown into the canal. With me for the ringside commentary is Scooby-Doo.
Well, Harry, Blackfang looks very confident at the weigh-in, despite the fact that in his last fight, he got his penis bitten off.
The Merry White House Experience urges all its listeners to bombard the BBC and ITV networks with letters and phone calls demanding the televisation of dogfighting to be included in the Christmas schedules. Write and tell us what replies you receive, okay? And mark your letters, televised dogfighting and cockfighting as well, you know, with razor blades on their legs, and send it to the BBC, care of Desmond Lynham, head of sport programmes, BBC Television, wherever it is. Next week, we'll be talking about the other sport which we think should be brought back, wrestling. If nothing else, this would bring giant haystacks back to our screen. A man named after that most terrifying of things, a haystack.
Oh, I say. Recently, we've seen huge arguments developing over the question of whether or not there should be a common European currency. Now, feelings run high on this one. Should we get rid of the pound? The Sun, ever sensitive on such matters, led the way with its forward-thinking headline, Up yours, dear lords!
Now, personally, it's hard to see what all the fuss is about. We effectively joined the European monetary system the moment we went decimal. It's shillings, half-crowns and guineas that make the British tradition, not what the Sun calls the dear old pound. Anybody who's ever been to Spain or France will know that actually their coins are much nicer than ours. The 20p coin, for example, looks like it started life in the Fisher-Price post office set. Well, the new 5p coin is good, only in that you can fool chocolate machines with it by knocking the spike off a drawing pin and using that instead. However, here on the Merry White House Experience, we think that we have the solution to the problem of European Monetary Union. Because there is a currency already in existence which already covers every country in the community. The logical choice for the common European monetary system is surely the ESO World Cup coin collection.
Now, the system is really very simple. The coins are all worth the same and interchangeable right across Europe. Also, there's the added advantage that if a country doesn't qualify for the World Cup, they're not allowed to have any money. Which is great, because it means that everything in Wales will be free.
Now, the basic unit of currency will be named after famous players. Now, in England, the basic currency will be the Gazza. There will be 2 Linekers to the Gazza, 4 Platts to the Lineker, and 500 Gary Stevens to the Sabutio player. The one that sort of snapped off its base. Reaction to the scheme from both political parties has been strong. John Smith.
There are 2 strands to Labour fiscal policy. First, we have always advocated entry into the ESO World Cup coin system. And secondly, we believe that I should buy a packet of double-action lockets.
Well, I proposed entry to the EWCC in 1986, but Mrs. Thatcher wouldn't hear of it. She said that with a currency called the Robson, we would be labelled the sick man of Europe.
Of course, there are disadvantages to the system. For a start, before you can draw out your money, you need to buy the right amount of petrol. If you're buying a house, for example, you'll probably need a tanker to get enough coins.
But all in all, the pros far outweigh the cons. For a start, when you go abroad, you won't need to go to a bureau de change. You can simply do swapsies on the ferry.
Similarly, nobody would be able to carry normal wallets or purses. Instead, everybody would have an A4 leatherette presentation folder with special holes cut in it, which are slightly too small for the coin.
Please welcome Mark Hurst.
Thank you. Big boo for the villain of the week, Rupert Murdoch. Go on, let's hear it. Go on. And of course, he's into Collins Publishers as well. He bought that out. And so, you know, Collins English Dictionary, for instance, is not going to be called Collins English Dictionary for very long. It'll be called Collins Whopping Big Dick. That's what it is. For Argy's B for Bingo, Birds, Booze, Boobs, Board, S, Pamela, C, Bimbo. Hello with them. I do sometimes go and pick up the Sun. If I'm on a train, I will pick it up and turn straight away to the letters pages, because it's very often the same letter. The funny things that children say in their innocence, send us your experiences, £10 for every letter printed, the winning letter. I was at my sister's the other day when my 4-year-old nephew walked in, looked at us and said, you couple of chuffing knob-gobblers. Left for days, thought your readers might find it amusing, huh? And every other week, for some reason, in every tabloid, there's always a story of some family in the north who've been living with a live Second World War bomb in the house that they never knew about. Head of the family, Mr. Smith, said, we didn't know, you know, we used it as a babysitter when kids were younger. I drilled three holes in it at one bit, so we're going to make a 10-pin bowling ball. We're looking at it. And the divorce law's been in the news, that no more quickie divorces. And vicars and priests who do these ceremonies, they can always tell which couples are going to make it, because it's their job. So they do try and give hints to the no-hopers, like, do you, Elizabeth Chalk, take Mr. Robert Cheese as your lawful wedman? And then when you get to the reception, it's all embarrassing and sickly, like the happy couple opening all their presents. So, well, you can never have too many towels, can you? Want to wipe that vomit up, there's a good start, haven't you? If you don't get married, you just live together. Now, that has its own set of problems, because when you're not married, you're not wholly committed. So when you have a row, you remember everything that you own in the flat. That just comes straight back to you. What do you mean, sleep on the settee? It's my bed. It's your settee as well, if you remember. I'll just go and sleep on the video recorder, shall I? Curl up in the wok. I think I bought that, didn't I? I've been in some bad relationships. I was actually in one that was directed by Alfred Hitchcock before he died. Psychological thriller in black and white, you know. And he even appeared as well, the obligatory cameo. He came through one day, right? We're having a row in the kitchen. It was you that left the landing light. I said, who's that fat guy with a cigar? Hello. Let's... You know the sort of thing. What do you mean, where's your dinner? It's in the oven, burnt to a frazzle. Just look at the time. I'll have it anyway. What is it? Salad. Just... You have venom coming out there. And of course, the sex gets less because it's hard for two people to excite each other sexually for many years. It's like a two-piece jigsaw. You just get fed up of putting it together. That's all. You know what it looks like? Just leave it in the box. That's all. And a man can't fake an orgasm. That's a problem. How could you do that? You'd have to get some theatrical sperm capsules and stuff. Explode an impact for a convincing performance, darling. There you go. So eventually, the only thing you do in bed together regularly is read. And that can be lovely. Sometimes you finish exactly the same times. Ah! Oh. Simultaneous chaptergasm we just shared there. Beautiful. I don't believe in true love, and I certainly don't believe in love at first sight. Just think, when you think, I'm garbling now, just when you think you're never going to feel vulnerable and just, what's your name, sir?
What's all the giggles?
Right, we're on to the correspondence experience now. We'll read out some letters that we've had from listeners this week. Last week, if you remember, we asked listeners to write in talking about adverts and what adverts really annoyed them or really irritated them. And this was all sparked off by a letter that we got last week about the Burger King advert on the aircraft carrier. And this one actually prompted some really fascinating letters.
Joanne Cartwright from Norfolk writes, in the Burger King advert, the bloke with the toasting fork walks out in front of an F-4 fighter. But the plane on which he toasts his delicious piece of dead cow is an F-15.
Well, isn't that interesting? Isn't that absolutely fascinating? And the other one that we mentioned, if you remember, was the Levi's 501 one with the motorbike. And the letter came in from Mike Craig from Bury in Lancs. And he says, dear sir, in response... Dear sir... dear sir, in response to your they wouldn't let that motorbike pass reception correspondence, I would just like to make this point. In that Levi's 501 ad with the motorbike, the bloke drives coolly straight out of the lift. Now, did he turn the bike round inside the lift? Or did he reverse it into the lift in the foyer? Which is very good, Mike. Very good.
Yeah. A guy called Stuart Jackson said, here are some opinions and questions I have on advertisements. One, it doesn't matter what stereo system your TV has, you still can't understand a single word Nigel Kennedy says. Two, the posing bastard on the Gillette advert should have been shot at birth. Three, what sort of a prat hasn't a copy of a book he wrote? The letter from Anthony Green of Chester. He says, fireworks safety adverts are another irritating one. To truly show up the dangers of fireworks, why don't they set kids on fire? a jolly good point.
Yeah, on the subject of fireworks, we also got this one. This is from Erin Parker from Nottingham, and she says, the makers of tampons are so keen to disguise what they call their freedom range that they wrap the tampons up in multicoloured paper so nobody will know what they are. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but if you have, I hope you've noticed the striking resemblance they bear to fireworks. They've even got a fuse. Well done, Erin. I don't know what she's talking about, obviously.
There's a letter from someone called Emma. You know the Lloyds Bank advert where there's that black horse running along a beach? Well, why don't they change it to a train running along a track and then throw Nigel Havers in front of it?
one-off ad. This is from Mick O'Sullivan, who is from Clifton in Bristol. And he says, dear Mary, that bank ad... Dear Mary, that bank ad when on a Sunday morning a yuppie bastard who lives by the docks takes out an empty milk bottle from the fridge. Why did he put it there in the first place?
And now, the swearing experience. Now, because our society insists that certain words are outlawed, this experience will have to employ specific code words. So when we say chuff or chuffing, we mean the F word. And for the C word, we will use the phrase Henry Kelly.
Although this may lead to confusion in, for example, the sentence, Henry Kelly, what a Henry Kelly.
Of course, strange that the word Henry Kelly is considered so despicable, as it is an extremely old English word stretching back to Chaucer.
And gads they all were the fair Zidhunt, that Henry Kelly is a bit of a Henry Kelly.
That extract from The Wife of Bath's Tale was read by Steve Henry Pelly. Different countries, of course, have different standards. In America, for example, it is perfectly acceptable to say the word bloody, and vice versa, nobody here bats an eyelid if someone comes out with the word mother.
Well, I've never had that reaction before. One of the greatest joys as a child is looking up naughty words in the dictionary. This is because naughty words are never more your own than when you are a child, and the dictionary gives them the stamp of authority. For a child, bottom being in the dictionary is like a curly-whirly having a position in the cabinet.
Dictionary writers, however, know all about kids doing this, and so always hold back the real meaning, the meaning you want, until the last definition. Now, Rob is now going to read the actual entry for bottom in Collins Reference Dictionary, right? This is true. And it's clear that whoever wrote it just really didn't want to have to say what a bottom really is.
Bottom, noun. One, the lowest part. Two, the lowest or last position. Three, the farthest part. Four, the part on which something rests. Five, the end which is underneath. Six, the seat of a chair.
This is really irritating after a while.
81, obscure variety of Venezuelan fish. It is. The bottom fish, so called because it swims at the bottom. 82, the lowest or last part. Oh, I've said that, haven't I? 83, oh, God. Oh, yes, no, Shakespearean clown, played by Brian Glover, always, excellent, yes. No problem with that at all. Bottom, no problem with that at all. 84. Yes, well, obviously, your arse. Yes. Satisfied now, a big, wobbly, great, fat reader's wife's arse. Sweaty, quivering cheeks on my face. Now, can we get on? Exactly what it says.
There are also some words which refer to practices so beyond Mary Whitehouse's ken, or even beyond her first husband, that you can say them on radio or TV because society's guardians don't know what they mean. For example, felching. Now, I can say that, but I can't explain what it means. Although, if anyone is fully aware of what it means, can I just advise them to buy a bottle of Plax?
The point is that when you get to felching, you're in a very interesting area, Mrs. Now... Mary Whitehouse thinks she's aware of every possible sexual depravity, which is why she looks like she does, even though she's only 27. But the felching, right, you can say this word right in front of her face because it's on a swearing frequency so high she can't hear it.
A lot of people are really wondering what it is. Failing this, swearing is covered in broadcasting by the beep. This begs the question, what is Roadrunner actually saying?
Minute. Minute. Henry Kelly. Belching.
I'm sure that's not it. What we'd like you to do now is write in with your favourite swear words and the situations in which you most like to use them. Put them in a top five, and if they match the top five selected by me, Rob, and the other members of the pools panel, then you win a free ticket to Going for Gold. Send your entries to the BBC, care of Kate AD, and we'll sort it out with Kate afterwards. Thank you very much.
The Britain of today is a land of reason, a land in which empirical science and rational thought has triumphed over mysticism and superstition.
Yes, in spite of modern advances, superstition is still alive and well. There are hundreds of superstitions that we all still adhere to in the late 20th century, even though we may pretend white rabbit, not too brown hair.
Who are these sad and pathetic pinch of a punch on the first of the month people who, in the face of all the evidence, continue, touch wood, to believe in no returns, that the ultimate evil is unleashed by putting a pair of new shoes on the table or opening your umbrella indoors?
Of course, it is bad luck to open your umbrella indoors because it means that you're obviously mentally deficient. But apart from that, there's no reason. Of course, the byproduct of this superstition is that umbrella quality control testers won't open umbrellas while they're still in the factory. So the bad luck comes to the consumer, who wonders why all umbrellas fall to bits within a month of buying them.
A lot of superstitions are also very out of date. For example, not walking under ladders. Most people jostle and queue to walk round a ladder on the pavement. However, this saying obviously dates from the time before large motorised vehicles were invented. Some people are now firm believers in the new superstition that it's bad luck to walk straight off a pavement and under an articulated lorry while avoiding a ladder.
Some people go round with a lucky rabbit's foot in their pocket. Now, this obviously isn't very lucky for the rabbit. There must be loads of crippled bunnies riding around in wheelchairs just so a few people can go around thinking their premium bond is now a bit more likely to come up. It can prove lucky, however, if you run out of Whiskers Supermeat, you can always give it to the cat. Many people, of course, invent their own superstitions. Usually these consist of having to do things in a particular order. This is particularly prevalent among sportsmen.
Mr. Bowler starts his run-up. Smith gives that familiar little tug on his cap. Bites his glove to pull it down. Grips his trousers at the back and tries to get them out of the little crack in his bum. Now he manoeuvres his box, touches his left ear with his tongue, spins his bat three times, pats down a couple of tufts of grass, kisses his St. Christopher, he's been bowled.
Now, Armando, our public-spirited but in fact ridiculously named producer, came up to us last week in the pub after the show and said, lads, the programme is all very well for people within the range of the Radio 1 transmitters here in Britain, but what about our boys out there in the Gulf? So it was decided that this year's Mary Whitehouse special assignment would be entertaining the troops.
Yes, November 1990, and the Mary Whitehouse team are forming a concert party to entertain our brave boys out there pitching Johnny Iraqi. Yes, life is hard out in the Gulf. And the British forces are always pleased to get parcels from home in dear old Blighty. This morning a package arrives, 1,000 free copies of that day's edition of The Sun.
Oh, great, all the Andrex have run out.
Well, meanwhile, back home in Britain, the team get down to putting the show together.
Tell you what, let's phone out the British Forces Gulf HQ and see what sort of thing they like.
Hello?
Hello, it's the Mary Whitehouse Experience here. We're thinking of coming out there to entertain the troops, and we were wondering what sort of thing you think they'd like.
Yeah, well, normally they send over Jim Davidson.
Yes, but we were wondering what sort of thing you think they'd like.
Well, I don't know. A bit of comedy, some magic maybe, a nice singer.
Shirley.
Who was that?
No one.
That was Shirley Bassey, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now, what about Bernie Winters and Schnorbit?
Oh, no, we'd be much more keen on the sultry Welsh songbird.
Oh, good. My daughter's in Brookside, you know.
There is a long and honourable tradition of army entertainment. In times of crisis, there are always entertainers willing to go in to keep up morale.
All right, lovely boys. I is going to choose a volunteer to go to Saudi Arabia.
How about me, Sergeant Major?
Be quiet, Lofty. I choose this for this mission, me. because then I gets to get out of doing the next series of Never the Twain.
But it's no easy ride in a concert party. In the Second World War, many entertainers played an active role, and some were captured and interrogated by the Germans.
Sir, you will answer our questions. What is your name?
Captain Reynolds.
And what is this little fellow's name?
This is Toby. Say hello to the Gestapo officer, Toby.
Hello, Gestapo officer.
Hello, Toby.
And what top secret plans aren't we going to tell him about, Toby?
The ones about the parachute drop.
That's right.
What parachute drop?
I'm not going to talk.
Shut up. I'm talking to Toby.
And now, as the day of departure approaches, the show's lineup still isn't quite complete, and the team continue to hold auditions.
Okay.
Send in the next one.
Hello. Name?
Chris Lowe.
Occupation?
I'm the other one off of the Pet Shop Boys.
Oh, not again. What are you going to do?
I'm going to sing.
Mm, I thought so. Next!
Oh, please, I'll do anything. I'll play the piano like Mr. Lardy Dog Gunner Graham.
Look, come on, clear up. Clear up. Next! What are you going to do for us?
I'm going to tell you a joke. And incidentally, I'm not going to tell you the one about Michael Heseltine and the bucket.
Yeah, okay, you're it.
Next. Name?
Geoffrey Howe.
Are you free next week?
Let me just check my diary. Yes.
And what are you going to do for us?
I'm going to sing.
And what are you going to sing for us, Sir Geoffrey?
I'm going to sing Betty Boo by Betty Boo. Betty Boo, Betty Boo, just doing the do. Hear the drummer get wicked.
Right, in the plane, everybody. I say, let's cook my burger, lovely.
Right, here we are. There's supposed to be someone from the British forces here to meet us.
Good evening. You be the entertainer?
Yes.
The last lot of entertainers that came here didn't last very long. That was a terrible thing to see. Jim Davidson died. Died. Dead as a Japanese dolphin. Dead. But don't let me put you off.
The party make their way into the base, but are soon aware that something is badly wrong.
Hang on, this isn't the British base. Look, that's the Stars and Stripes.
Hey, just what in hell are you goddamn limeys doing in here? This is private property.
I'll have you know that we are a concert party from the Mary Whitehouse Experience. And who are you?
My name, boy, is Lieutenant Colonel...
Vito. Sassoon.
Have the team walk straight into Vidal's clutches? How will the show go down? Will Gary Sick be in the audience? Find out next week.
Yeah, stop the music now. At the end of that sketch, I believe. You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Puntecue Dennis, Mark Hurst.
Doing the do.
The address to send your swear words to is Henry Kelly to Henry Kelly, care of The Mary Whitehouse Experience, Radio 1, BBC Broadcasting House, London W1A, 1AA.
You can't ignore me.
The show was listened to by the son of the bloke who wrote Kevin Keegan's one hit. Thank you very much.